Grab a chip and a chair. It's time for the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Brought to you by the Best Bet Poker Rooms at Jacksonville and Orange Park. Now, the Best Bet Poker Show pals.
Happy Hump Day!
Yeah!
Hump Day!
Yeah!
Hump Day!
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Wednesday.
Welcome to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Jesse the Boss.
Yeah.
I know Dustin is running the stream over there. We got an interesting dynamic of the show happening tonight. So we're all kind of spread around Jacksonville doing our best to bring you guys some epic poker talk for the next hour. So bear with us. Hopefully the connection is well and you guys can hear us nice, loud, and clear. I'm not going to lie, I was kind of expecting a woo-woo there.
How about a yeah? There it is.
All right, so many fun, interesting things that are happening in the poker world. We got the World Series of Poker. The first flights have kicked off, the $10,000 main event. Now, this is also an interesting dynamic to the way that they are holding the WSOP main event this year, which is they have two separate events, one that's being housed here in the U.S. and one that is in Europe. So they're going to play both of those events. And then at the end, they're going to have a player.
At the end, we'll have one player from each. So the winner from the GG Poker in Europe will come to the Rio in Las Vegas and play against the winner on the WSOP platform here in the United States. So that, and the world, WSOP is adding
$1 million
to the heads up battle. So there's kind of there's going to be like a European winner online on the GG platform online, then a US winner on the US side on WSOP.com. But then they're going to play heads up in person at the Rio live on ESPN. With $1 million extra on top of whatever they've already won.
Right. So they had the first three starting flights happen Sunday. Started on Sunday. They had a total of 246 entries that were made before the end of the closing of the registration day. That added $2.4 million to the prize pool. So they can continue to play 16 levels, narrowing down to 62 players. So the interesting thing about this is I feel like it's two separate tournaments, right? So you have, and here's what I understand that like in order to, for it to be the World Poker Tour, they have to be able to for it to be the World Series of Poker, they have to offer it to everybody in the world, right? It can't just be here within the US. So I understand the concept, but what I don't like is I feel like it's three tournaments, right? Because you're playing one tournament within the United States. You're playing one tournament within, you know, Europe or wherever their surrounding areas are. And none of those players actually play together or correspond with each other. So you're playing down to a winner on one, down to a winner on the other. Well, that's effectively that's two separate tournaments. And then they come back and it's sort of like the tournament of champions, right? It's like now, Well, you guys both won an event. So now you get to play for an additional heads up battle because they already played heads up, right? I mean, they've already played heads up.
I gotta have an odd question though. I didn't look at the complete schedules of each one. Are they playing at the exact same time?
They're not. So the
could you conceivably play in the United States and in Europe?
I don't think so because I think each platform is individual to the country. So I
right,
think
but you could play in the United States and then fly to Europe.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I guess that's possible. So the U.S., you won't, and that's a great question. I don't want to answer that. But they won't start playing in the United States until the 13th of December.
But they're already playing in Europe.
They're already playing in Europe, yeah. So the U.S. facing tournament begins December 13th with a single starting flight. And the final table will be set the following day. And then the in-person final table will take place on the 28th. So
one flight in the United States on the 13th, and then it ends the following day on the 14th?
The following day. And then they come back, and it looks like the final where they play. The two tournaments meet on December 30th for the final battle for the actual bracelet and the $1 million in prize money. So yeah, I just, you know, it's strange to me. I feel like you've already battled it out. You've already played heads up. You've gone through all of this stuff. So shouldn't that technically be like a second tournament you're winning?
So yes.
You know what I mean? It's kind of very bizarre.
It's very odd. And on the European side, they have multiple flights.
There's multiple flights, multiple days. Yeah.
Day one A, day one B, day one C. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they're doing different like that.
Day one B and day one C don't even take. They haven't even started yet. They don't take place until December 5th and 6th, or 6th and 7th, or something.
But I think you could conceivably play in Europe and play. No.
I mean, you could play in Europe, and if you go broke, come back and play within the United States, I suppose. But I feel like you can't do that because it has to be single entry, right? Like,
so you play down to 9 players on December 7th in Europe, and they come back to play the final table on December 15th. So you could potentially, conceivably, if you can get an airplane ticket, win here in the United States on December 14th, fly straight to King's Casino in Europe and play out your final table at the King's Casino December 15th.
All right, how about this? How about if you play in Europe?
I'm going for it. You have to play Europe, then United States, then Europe.
Wait a minute. What if you play Europe and then you make it, right? You advance. And then you come back, you play in the U.S. You make it, you advance down to one, you win, and then you go back to Europe and you win that one.
Right.
What's that going to look like on TV? Do you just run back and forth and play yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to. There's no way they can let that go.
You just run back and forth. Try to outplay yourself, pick up the extra million, and call it good.
Maybe you can put yourself on Zoom on one side and your real self, your in-person self on the other side.
Your future self.
Your future self. You would be playing with your future, your past, and your present self.
Literally.
Mind blown.
Mind blown.
At any rate, so we got that going on with the World Series of Poker, which is pretty strange. And of course, we know with the World Series of Poker, the next thing that comes with that is the inductees of the Poker Hall of Fame. So this is always this is a fun thing that happens, and they always announce this during the WSOP main event. So the first Poker Hall of Fame inductee. This started in 1979. There are now, do we know how many players are in there?
In the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, what is it, like 58 or something? Or it'll be the 57th and the 58th inductees. It happened in 2019, so we're now coming up on 60. Okay. So it has been the case that originally they only inducted one person into the Hall of Fame in the early years. And I think that did not change until sometime in the, like, you know, early 2000s. And then they started nominating or choosing two people for the Hall of Fame. They are now going back to one person this year. And, I would just venture to guess that the reason for that is because there is not a whole ton of poker that's been played during 2019, right?
You know, I would guess that that's the case.
Or I guess 2020.
But there are, there was a bunch of people on the 2019 list that are all very well-deserved. So I kind of thought they would keep it at two people and try to knock a few of those people out while we're not creating more people that are going to be well-deserved as well.
You know, here's something that I think is interesting. And I guess either I didn't know this or it's new, but I didn't realize that you could just nominate anybody you wanted. Anybody could nominate anybody for the Poker Hall of Fame. I think that's new this year because there's always been a nomination panel. And the reason I know that is because they always ask me to be part of that. So I'm trying to figure out, as I was looking at this story, you can literally, anybody could submit a nomination between now and December 11th. So if you feel like you're an exceptional poker player and maybe you're being overlooked, you could potentially self-nominate. And then maybe we'll have one of our own Jacksonville people here that make it into the Poker Hall of Fame. Or maybe you want to nominate your buddy. I don't know. But here's the criteria if you want to do it. You must be a poker player who has acknowledged top competition. You have to be at least 40 years old at the time of nomination. You have to have played for high stakes, played consistently well, gaining the respect of peers, stood the test of time. And let's be honest, if you're 40, can you really attest to that?
Not quite.
Not so much. And then, of course, for non-players, because we know that the Poker Hall of Fame is not just for players within the industry, but it's also for professionals within the industry. So for non-players, you have to contribute to the overall growth and success of the game of poker with undeniable, positive, and lasting results. Now, I'll be honest with you. I feel like we have many of those personnel here in Jacksonville. From a player standpoint, yeah, it's kind of hard to say because I think most of the players that we have that still remain in Jacksonville that are exceptional players, they're just exceptional players in Jacksonville. That might sound strange, but most of the people that travel and go outside, I find that they don't tend to come back as often.
Yeah,
when they're successful, happens, yeah. They sort of go. But that's the nature of the industry, right? Because the games are bigger. You find more action in other places where poker is thriving in a larger capacity than what it is here in Jacksonville. So I don't know. So at any rate, if you want to nominate some of your people, some of your friends, or you'd like to be the 57th and 58th inductee, then definitely go to WSOP.com and nominate yourself or one of your friends. You can find it there. You can also go to the Poker Hall of Fame, and they're going to have a link that you can click on there as well.
And, you know, the 2019 guys that I guess didn't make it in, the Chris Bjorn, mm-hmm. David Chu, Eli Alezra.
Still up for the picking.
Antonio Hospondiari. That's right. This is a phenomenal group who all will probably make it someday. So I think it's weird that they just cut it down to one person this year, because mm-hmm. now's an opportunity to get one of these guys in, and maybe a Matt Savage or somebody like that as well, mm-hmm. Because all of these people are all deserving to be in there and should be in there someday. But, you know, if we keep creating all these great poker players that reach 40 years old or more, whatever it is, mm-hmm. how are we going to get them all into the Hall of Fame?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. Well, the finalists will be voted on by the 32 living Hall of Fame members. So the remaining living members of the Poker Hall of Fame will decide on the finalists once that's happened. And then the announcement of the final results will be made on December 30th, just prior to the start of the 2020 WSOP main event final table of the heads up battle between the US and Europe and surrounding countries. So that's what we're looking for. All right, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we got lots of stuff to talk about. We still have to give you guys a quick little update on the Negreanu and Polk battle. What's happening? What's going on there? And then Jonathan Little wrote a nice little article talking about why you need to stop raising with top pair. It seems pretty simple, but he actually pulls apart a hand. And I think that when I read it, I immediately realized that so many people make this mistake, myself included.
I can't wait to hear it.
So we're going to talk about that, and hopefully we can stop you guys from making that mistake. That and more. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDill here with Jesse the Boss. Dustin's running our stream. Country in the booth back there. Woohoo!
Yeah, country.
All right, so if you guys are just joining us, we have been talking about the World Series of Poker and how that's kind of coming back in its own, by its own right, with some strange new, you know, rules and the way that they're working things. But I know that's not the only thing that's been grabbing everybody's attention, right? There's been a lot of talk and banter, as we've known for months, over the Daniel Negreanu and the Doug Polk heads-up battle. And they have been playing for a couple of weeks now, I guess. Jess, you remember when they started the first part of their...
I think they've been playing since like November 4th, I think, so a month.
Okay, so
off and on, not every day.
So at this point, so if we remember, there's been like up and down. Negreanu took the lead, then Polk took the lead, then Negreanu took the lead, then it kind of leveled back out. Now there's a $6,000 lead by Doug Polk, or $600,000 lead by Doug Polk, which is pretty strong. That's pretty big for a couple reasons. We're kind of, you know, it's not the first couple hands, right? So we have fewer and fewer hands to get through. Yep, it's 15 buy-ins. It's getting bigger. And it was almost virtually even prior to going into this last match, which was on Saturday. So it's kind of interesting. But I will tell you this. you know, as we talk about and watch the Negreanu and the Polk match, or I feel like any heads up match for that matter, right? Like even the Galfond challenge, but the Galfond challenge is a little bit different because they play PLO predominantly, don't they? They don't play Hold'em.
Right? I think Galfond is mostly PLO, yes. So that's just his game of choice. That's what his challenge is.
So I feel like it makes it a little bit more interesting because it's a game that's a little bit different than what you're used to seeing. But here's the thing that I think is strange. All of us are taking, or not all of us, but most people are watching and following this fight, this battle. We're pulling apart hands. We're analyzing. We're looking at all of this stuff, right? And there's been talk about solvers, whether they should be used, and you know how to make it fair on a playing field of two people. It goes on and on, right? But the thing is they are playing heads up. So how much strategy do you really need? And I know that might sound really silly and ridiculous, but when you're talking about playing heads up, there is one variable as far as a person is concerned, as opposed to eight or nine. So it's the same person. It never changes. How much do you really need to like prepare for this?
Well, I think the preparation comes more in game than pregame because they're playing 25,000 hands. And I think the preparation is more adjusting to your opponent and how they're playing, more so than how much did you really need to prepare leading up to this. They've both been preparing for years. They're both great poker players. So now, you know, as we talked, and Daniel doesn't want to show whole cards, and that would probably give more of an advantage to Doug Polk. While you can agree or disagree, I don't even know if I agree or disagree with that anymore because it's sort of equal, right?
They're not showing the whole card, you mean?
Yeah, I don't think it gives anybody a better advantage.
It does when they go back. See, it's not in the beginning. It's in the end because when they go back and they can study the hands and what has happened, that's where the edge is gained. And you know, I think it's funny because if you don't want that to be available, does that mean that you're concerned about somebody finding a leak in your game? Or does that mean that you want to be lazy and you're concerned that if you give that information, you're going to have to be like, oh, man, I got to go back and study
I'm at
a disadvantage.
No, that's a very good point, because at this point, although I said all along, it's an advantage for Doug Polk to see all the whole cards just because he's more adapt at handling that amount of information and that type of information. Now, it may be, you know, maybe Daniel could have helped himself by saying, okay, fine, we'll show all the whole cards. And then he can go back, not only necessarily to see what Doug Polk is doing, but how, because Daniel's going to adjust. And Doug Polk is going to have to adjust to Daniel and vice versa. So they can see how they adjust. And, but I don't know. But, you know, we play pure poker. We don't look at the whole cards. I still think it's more so the strategy leading up to it is the strategy of how they adapt to how the other player is playing. I think that's more important than what they did months ago.
Yeah. It's just fun. And, you know, I'm not, some people really love to watch heads up play and they really like to watch that style of game. I find it to be rather boring. I'm not going to lie. I find it to be, well, there's a lot of action. There's a lot of, you know, there's tons of four betting. I mean, you see four betting pretty much every hand, which is pretty cool, right? And that there's something to be said about that.
Are they doing that? Because I don't always see that in heads up.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're pretty active. I mean, there's like the hands that are recapped and talked about. I mean, obviously, they're going to talk about those the most. But I feel like there's a lot of conversation about three betting and four betting hands that are, you know, happening pre-flop and so forth and so on. So it just... It's kind of boring to me. I don't know. I like the dynamics of having other people in and having to adjust to the different opponents that are in the hand, or having to adjust when you have multiple people in the hand versus just knowing no matter what happens, the variable is always constant. There is only one other person. Like, it's such a
it becomes
a little monotonous.
It narrows it down to either you get away with the bluff or you don't.
Right. I feel like it's polarized, and so it's nice enjoyable for me. So,
you know, it's not like, I mean, you know, you know very frequently whether you are value betting or bluffing, or so you don't always know that. Mm-hmm. But when you know multi-handed pot, and you can't get away with things multi-handed because there's more than one other person. Mm-hmm. But you're right; it does narrow it.
Do you think that? Do you think if you guys ran some really fun, like heads up type thing, like as this is kind of closing out, do you think you would get a lot of traction because people are kind of tuned in and honed into heads up, and they've been watching an exceptional amount of heads up play over the last, you know, whatever it's been, month and a half or whatever. And they're watching two of the greatest, right? Because it's kind of like the same thing with the World Series. People see it, they're itching to play, and they want to, like, they're
How deep are they into this match?
The answer is, let me look. I'm not certain.
Maybe we'll put in another heads up tournament. Maybe we'll put in a little heads up tournament in Jacksonville and we'll call it, I don't know, just call it the heads up challenge. But we'll just do another heads up tournament and see, I like it. Because you're right. People are doing, they are watching.
You could call it the heads up NP challenge. And if people say, what's NP? You say, no problem.
No problem.
No problem. Negron, Polk, whatever. Whatever it is. You know, I don't see here in front of me how many hands they have left to play, but I'll look as we go on break and figure it out for you and let you know. But so, all right. So one of the other things that, so we talk about the heads up play, and that's kind of fun. And looking at the way that people analyze hands, like it's cool. But again, we talk about how often are you in a situation where you're playing heads up now? More likely than before, because there's a lot of online play that's happening, right? So you would find yourself in heads up play far more regular now than you ever have in the past, but still you're not doing a lot of it. So wouldn't you rather spend more of your time studying and focusing on games that you participate in more regularly?
Well, it's
like
true.
Full games.
You know, you generally never play heads up, whether you want to or not, just because mm-hmm. You're not going to find heads up cash games pretty much anywhere. And the only times you find yourself heads up is in a tournament at the final table when you're down to the final two players. Mm-hmm. And typically that doesn't last very long. So realistically, you're right. It's not really necessary to study deep heads up strategy. It's more important to find a way to get heads up.
Now, would you guys, if somebody's like, so let's say you had like 10 people that came in and they were like, you know, we would really like, we want to do like a heads up. Like we want to, like, can we secure a table for like heads up play for the day? Like, we just want to play like heads up. We're going to rotate in and out. We have these people. This is what we would like. Would you allow that? Would you guys do that? And what would that look like?
I mean, the short answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it is, there's always we have a cost associated, so we would have to negotiate that and figure that out. Just like a tournament has a cost or a mm-hmm. cash game takes a rake, but we could always figure it out. Yeah.
Here's what I want to see. I want to see that happen. I want to see some people come in and say they want to play, and I want to hang out and watch and see who these guys are. And then I want to jump in and put my name on the list.
After you study them and watch
After
them.
After I study them.
Get them
I
all
bring,
figured
I
out.
I bring all the information I've learned from the Polk and Negreanu battles. And then I just take them to the cleaners.
Take them to the cleaners.
Take them to the cleaners and either clean them out or take them to the cleaners because they took all my money and I need them to pay for me.
I'll be honest. Although I haven't watched really much of this match at all.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of reasons. One, because it is kind of boring to watch, especially online heads up, even more of a snooze fest, right? But I really like to play heads up.
Yeah, no, I love to play heads up. So don't get me wrong. Yeah. I like to play it, but it's not fun to watch.
No, but it is.
Yeah, it's like watching paint dry. It's terrible.
It is a blast to play. So I would love to play. I like to play every chance. If I'm in a tournament series and I'm there and there's a heads up tournament, I play them just for the opportunity.
Cool. All right. Well, speaking of opportunities, I'm going to give you an opportunity to learn about a mistake or a leak that you might be making when you're playing your standard typical 2-5 type game when you flop top pair. What's a mistake you could be making there? What does that look like? And how can we fix it? So we're going to talk about that and more. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
The Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Alan McNeil here with Jesse the Boss. Justin. Oh, a Freudian slip. Dustin. Dustin running the stream over there. All right, so as we're coming back here, because I don't want to forget, and we have tournaments that are coming up, and we got all these fun things that are happening in December. You guys had two really incredibly successful tournaments that happened, one in October, one in November, the Fall Frenzy, right? Is that what we call them? The Fall Frenzy?
The Fall Frenzy, and then the Fall Frenzy.
The Fall Frenzy 2. And both of them were vastly successful, so we expect to see more of that. Also, we will have another 1010 XL event as we come into the new year. So there's going to be lots of opportunities for you guys to use those tournament bucks. So right now, 641-1010 is the phone number, 641-1010. We will take the fifth caller right now, and you will have a $50 tournament voucher that you'll be able to use at either Best Bet location, whether that be in Jacksonville or the Orange Park property. And you can use that for a daily $50 tournament, or you can use it towards the purchase or the buy-in of a larger tournament. Hopefully you'll be able to call us with one of those winning tournament vouchers and tell us that, you won the tournament. That would be great. Hopefully that $50 gets parlayed up into like $5,000.
That would be awesome. That's always the story we're looking for. The parlay, and we do have some tournaments coming. They're not on the calendar yet, or the info isn't out yet, but we will do our winter series in January.
Yeah, so it's exciting. So tournaments coming up, so hold on to those tournament bucks. You can stash them. They don't expire, or it takes a real long time for them to expire. So you can collect them and use more at once. So we're looking forward to seeing you guys for the next tournament. Just before we went on break, we were talking about the Negreanu and Polk heads-up match, how many hands they had played, and kind of where they are in their match right now. So they have played just over 6,000 hands, 6,227 hands. They are slated for 25,000 hands. So they're about, what's that, about a third of the way there? A little bit more than that?
Yeah,
so quarter. So we're getting close. And to have a $600,000 lead in that spot is definitely much more substantial than it would have been in the first 200 hands. So we'll continue to watch and see how that pans out. People are taking action. There's lots of side bets and all sorts of fun things going on. So if you want to get in and just kind of follow the Twitter shenanigans between the two of them, that's always fun and entertaining. And we'll keep you up to date as that progresses throughout time. So so let's go back to Jonathan Little's article that I read, and he was talking about, now, first of all, for those of you who don't know, he has an incredible training site. And he's got some Cyber Monday, Cyber Week deals that are going on right now where you can get discounts to be part of his group, and that's pokercoaching.com.
Correct.
So if you guys are interested in that, I know he's got some great things, and he has a tremendous amount of content. So if you're looking to study, if you're looking to bring your poker level to the next game, or maybe you listen to the show because you have a son, a daughter, a significant other, a friend, a family member that plays poker and they're looking to kind of boost their skill or study a little bit, this would be a phenomenal gift to give them for the holidays. So again, that's pokercoaching.com with Jonathan Little. And I promise you, you will not be disappointed. There's more content than anybody could possibly get through
in
a subscription.
I don't know how it's possible to have that much content, because I don't think I could possibly ever see all of his content.
Yeah,
and he has somehow created it. It's really amazing. So there is tons, and it's great content, and he's easy to understand and listen to.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. He's an excellent teacher. So check that stuff out. All right, so he talks about a 2-5 no limit game, and he talks about a critical error that people make. Now, this is definitely the target market of the group of people that we predominantly talk to, I would say, are 2-5 recreational players, right? 2-5 recreational players, 1-2 players, and then anywhere kind of in between, right? So he uses an example of playing in a 2-5 game. The effective stack size is 500, which is pretty standard in a game, especially here in Jacksonville. You're in middle position, okay? And a somewhat, so I'll just read through the scenario of what happens. A somewhat tight passive player raises to 15. Okay, he's got a $500 effective stack size, and he's in middle position. And our hero called on the button with the King Jack of Hearts. So King Jack of Hearts on the button calls the $15 raise from middle position. All right. Now he talks a little bit about why calling on the button with the King Jack of Hearts is a good plan there, and how if he had King Jack offsuit, why he would have folded, and he kind of goes into all of these, and that's a whole nother conversation. But I do think that it's important to mention that he talks about calling in these situations, raising in these situations, and folding. And the gist of sort of what he comes, the conclusion that he kind of brings around is, listen, you're playing against a somewhat tight, passive player from middle position. Their range is going to be fairly narrow. Right. So you don't want to get out of line with a King Jack suited, as you wouldn't want to play at all if you had a King Jack offsuit. Because the one thing that we know between those two is that you can make a flush and trap somebody with a fairly a fairly sizable flush, right? So that's the idea. So we get there. All right, so everybody else is folded. We're playing 2-5 again. So the flop comes King 8-5 rainbow. Okay. Giving the hero top pair. So the opponent bets $30 into the $37 pot, and the hero decides he's going to raise and make it 100. So now remember, the hero has the King Jack of Hearts. So he is flopped top pair on a rainbow board, a very uncoordinated rainbow board. So it's very dry, right?
And the top card is a king or a jack?
King.
King, okay.
Right? So he raises and makes it 100. Now, this is a spot that so many people do this. I do this.
Yeah, so do I.
Sure, why not, right? Let's get some money in the pot. There's only a couple of us. Let me try to extract as much as I can possibly extract out of this guy, right? That's my plan on the flop. Now, here, let's walk through what he says, which I think is interesting. Okay. On the flop, the hero should definitely call. The only trouble turn card is an ace. Which is true, right? Correct. So the only thing you're concerned about on the turn is an ace. You don't have to worry about 7-6 making a straight, because obviously tight passive players generally are not raising with a 7-6 suited or unsuited from middle position, right?
Right.
So you don't need to worry about hands like that. You don't need to worry if your opponent happens to have a hand like pocket queens through nines, he's effectively drawing dead. So you don't need to worry about that hand, right? So you don't need to raise to protect your hand. Effectively, if you're raising.
And that's the key, is you don't need to raise to protect your hand.
Right. There's no protection needed, because what could the guy really have that he's going to draw out of you? He's not going to draw it on you.
Either you have him crushed or he's got you crushed,
right? That's it. So when you're raising for value. That's the intent and the purpose of your raise. Okay. So, here's the thing that I want you to think about. If you raise it to 100 and let's say your hero calls, now we've overinflated the pot and the turn card comes. If an ace doesn't come, you're effectively going to have to put the rest of your stack in, right? Because now we've created roughly like a $250 pot and we've left ourselves with about, you know, $300 effectively, 300 and some change, right?
Yeah, 385. But you're right. It's a tough spot. You have a big pot, and if you do get called, and a random card comes off on the turn, what do you do? And that's what you have to think about before you make that $100 raise.
Mm-hmm.
Because the play, maybe if you think your hand is still good, you need to bet it. But is he going to call with queens or jacks or a lesser king? He doesn't have a lesser king. Because, right, we already established he's a tight
passive player from middle position. Player,
so he doesn't have a lesser king than mm-hmm. King Jack.
Right. And so that's what he talks about. So he says, if the hero raises, many of the hands that he beats are going to fold. But if he calls, he forces his opponent to stay in the pot with many inferior hands, allowing him to make costly errors on the turn and river. And that's the key, right? If you call, you put him in a spot where you can cause him to make substantial errors on the turn with a hand like two queens that he can't get away from. If you raise the flop, he's just going to pitch it. But if you just call the flop, you might get him to call the turn, and you might even get him to bet on the turn, right? Like, there's so many additional things because he's not necessarily going to put you on a hand of strength because you're just calling. And we all know that that's what happens. So most importantly, when the hero happens to have the worst hand, calling will usually result in him losing less because the pot will be smaller. So right. Now you have the opponent who re-raised all in for 485. So this is what happens in the hand. He bets, you raise and make it 100, and now he goes all in, and you're stuck with a hand like King Jack of Hearts on a board that's super dry, and it's King High. That's not a hand you want to be forced to fold there.
Right. And the problem now you have to fold, and if you fold, you can't win anything.
You can't win anything because you've folded. And you've put yourself in a situation that you don't ever want to be in because the guy could have you smashed or he could be making a huge play at the pot knowing that there are very few hands you can call with. In fact, there are really only three, right? I mean, in fact, outside of flopping a set, you could call with aces, you could call with ace king.
Right.
You could maybe find a call with king queen, but probably not.
That's about it.
Really, that's about it. And that's pretty marginal. Everything else is going to be, you know, flopping a set. Kings, eights, fives. That's it. So at this point, it should be clear that the hero is in bad shape. I'd be shocked, right? You have to be shocked if your opponent shows you kings, eights, fives, aces, ace, king, essentially every time. That's what he's going to show you because he's not putting 485 in the pot if he doesn't have the goods.
No, you virtually have to fold.
You have to fold. You effectively have to fold almost everything, which is why it's even smarter to call because at least you get to peel the turn card.
Right.
You don't want to have to give your hand up there, right? It's not a good idea. So as a general rule, when a straightforward player is trying to get their stack in on the flop, we all know what that means, right? Like if you have a tight player who's trying to get their entire stack in on the flop, you probably need to run.
Right.
Because they're going to have the goods. So here's something to consider, right? If you know that, do you exploit it? Or do you adopt that type of image and then use it to your advantage and find spots like that to make plays in? And that's kind of a fun thing to think about. And that's what I would do. All right, so while the hero is certainly going to lose some money in this situation, he lost way more than what was necessary. If the hero just called the $30 flop bet and the $75 turn bet, he would have lost $105 instead of losing his entire stack at $485.
And it also gives him an opportunity to spike a jack on the turn.
Yeah, it also gives him fold equity. He's also able to fold on the turn and lose less.
Right. He has fold equity on the turn if the other guy makes a big bet. And you can catch up on the turn. But you can't catch up from the muck.
You can't catch up from the muck. So I think that overplaying that top pair against your...
It's a great piece of advice.
Your tight passive player from middle position... I would say maybe step back a little bit and reconsider just calling there and, avoiding that raise, overinflating the pot and being forced to fold a hand you don't really want.
Also, even if it's not a tight player like that and it's a kind of an overly aggressive player, but you're considered more of a tight player, if you raise there, he's just going to fold. Or if you call, he might fire at you one more time on the turn.
Yeah. Just remember to not overinflate the pot with marginal hands. You don't want to overinflate the pot unless you absolutely have the stones and you know that people are going to get it in. That would be the only time to overinflate the pot. Short of that, be very cautious, especially with those medium or marginal hands. All right, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we will talk all things promotions and put a wrap on the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Adam McDeal here with Jesse the Boss, wrapping up the program. All right, as we know, December is a month full of fun, holiday fun, parties, places to go, people to see, things to do. It's time to get dressed up. It's time to shop. It's time to be festive. It's time to have eggnog. And it is time to win some money, most importantly.
Cha-ching.
Cha-ching. So backed by popular demand. As always, next Saturday, December 12th, we'll kick off our 12 days of Christmas promotion. So if this is new to you this year, this is a wonderful promotion for 12 straight hours at both properties, $1,200 high hands starting on the 12th. And then every day it will increase by $100 each day for that remaining hour. So on the 12th, they'll give away $1,200 an hour, the 13th, $1,300, the 14th, $1,400. And we'll go all the way up to the 23rd, where it's $2,300 every hour to a high hand winner. So tons and tons of cash going out the door those 12 days. Boss Man, what is that, $250,000 in cash?
Something like that. It's close to that, yeah. It's a lot of money.
$250,000 in cash going out the door in 12 days. So make sure you guys put that on your calendar for some cash play. Tournament players, check it out. Orange Park, the big Orange Park tournament is happening this weekend.
It's the GOPO, the Greater Orange Park Open Championship, Saturday at noon, $300 buy-in. This is a one-day tournament. It's going to be a lot of fun. We haven't had a nice big tournament in Orange Park in a while, so come on out and check it out. There's still two satellites left, tomorrow and Friday, 2 p.m., just $60 with high hands leading up to that. Win your way in.
I love it. And don't forget this Sunday, the Jags play, and it is game day high hand. So, Boss Man, tell them what that looks like. We got the Jags and the Vikings, so 1 o'clock game, and then we have the Broncos and the Chiefs, the 8 o'clock game on Sunday. And so if you win a high hand during that time.
So if you win a high hand during that time, it's $1,000 an hour to the high hand. This is for both rooms combined. But if you have the highest hand during the entire game, you win 50 times the total score of that game. So look for some high scoring games, Jags versus Vikings and Broncos versus Chiefs. It could be a couple high scoring games.
Could be. So here's my question. Do you guys pick the games specifically on the lines, or do you just randomly pick a game and that's the one you go with?
We pick the Jags game because we're in Jacksonville, and we pick a game based on the time of day. Randomly, we don't look at the lines at all.
What is the highest amount that you've paid out, do you know, on that promotion?
I don't. It's always in about the $2,500 range. Because, you know, it's usually about 48 points scored.
I was going to say, what's the average number of points scored?
About 48? This year, between 45 and 50, about 48 probably. So 2,400. So, but you win the 1,000 for having the high hand of the hour, and then you also win an extra 2,400 on top of it, assuming there was 48 points scored in the game.
Fantastic. Well, as you know, the Christmas holidays are coming up, and we got some special hours in the poker room. They will close Christmas Eve at 6 p.m. and reopen Christmas Day at 4 p.m. Stick that on your calendar. You can find tons of information about tournaments and high-end promotions. Go to bestbetjacks.com for all of your information. That's going to do it for us tonight, but don't go anywhere. End of the night with Rick Ballou is coming up next for Jesse the Boss, Country, and Dustin. I'm Allie McDeal saying, until next time, we hope to see you at the final table.